so far. Very inspiring discussions. And I want to thank the organizers. In particular, Nina Brion and Pia Tillmann. Also, thanks to Heiko Hoffmann for guiding us through the discussion in, later on. I want to open the floor with a few brief remarks on the overall theme of copying, of quoting and citing, concepts and ethics of quotation. Myself, I'm a philosopher at the University of Münster. My research focus is in aesthetics and the ethics of copying. I've been working with a research group at the University of Bielefeld's Center for Interdisciplinary Research. We were quite lucky that Lionel Bentley and a couple of other copyright scholars contributed to this group, together with philosophers, social scientists, media scientists, and scholars from art history, music, and literature. We've learned a lot about copyright, what it's needed for, why it is the way it is today, and how it might perhaps be improved. And that's why I'm here today, because copyright law is essentially about the question, who may use certain signs or images or musical material, and who may demand from others that they refrain from using certain signs or images or musical material unless they get a license. I want to start with some remarks on copying and citing, and then focus on controversies about secondary use of musical material and the Kraftwerk case. I know that probably most of you are here today because you're particularly interested in that latter topic. So quoting is a type of copying, and the ethics of quotation is an important part of the ethics of copying. You can quote me. Eberhard Ortlund started with the claim that quoting is a type of copying. Of course, you don't need to quote me for that, since you already knew that. On the other hand, if I just copy my sentence stating that quoting is a type of copying and put inverted commas around them, I'm still not quoting that sentence, nor quoting myself. I'm just repeating myself. According to the Oxford English Dictionary, quotation is used primarily with regard to certain speech acts and the linguistic material used in speech acts. It is, I quote, a group of words taken from text or speech and repeated by someone other than the original author or speaker, unquote. There are two moves involved in quoting: taking something, picking up or borrowing some form of expression from someone else, and repeating it, saying a certain phrase again, writing the same words in a different context. The paradigmatic situation is that you have, on the one hand, an original author or speaker who said or wrote something, allegedly for the first time, and, on the other hand, a second person who has heard or read the first speaker's speech and now picks up a phrase or even a longer passage from that text and repeats this group of words, incorporates it in her own speech. Like what I have done right now with this dictionary definition, even though I do not consider it to be original in any sense. The miraculous thing is that the words that have been taken from the other's speech remain, in some sense, the same, while their meaning may change according to the context into which they have been adopted. This is really not special at all. Every child does it. We do it all the time. We could not get into the language that we call our native tongue, or our mother's tongue, as the Germans put it, without picking up words and phrases from others and imitating, repeating them. And this is true not only for our so-called natural language or our second languages, but at least to a certain degree, also for the languages of art, to quote the famous title by Nelson Goodman. In order to be able to make music and even to appreciate music, you have to be acquainted with the musical vocabulary and grammar, a shared social practice of musical forms that become remarkable and meaningful as they remind you of something you've heard or maybe even played before, or because they are different in a particular way different from what you've been used to know. Quoting, borrowing, sharing forms of expression, and even referring to forms of expression that you would not want to adopt as your own, quoting is always social interaction. It is not the only type of social interaction, but arguably the most important, and certainly the most common and most encompassing dimension of social interaction. And social interaction is full of conflicts, and conflicts need to be resolved, and that's why we need an ethics of quoting. We are inherently social animals, and political animals, as Aristotle said, because we are mimetic animals. We share our common language or languages. We incessantly copy and imitate, emulate, quote, or mock each other. We become capable of expressing ourselves only by taking up and maybe transforming forms of expression that we have previously encountered in others. The Russian literary theorist and philosopher of language, Mikhail Bakhtin, notably put it this way: our speech, that is all our utterances, including our creative works, is filled with others' words, varying degrees of otherness or varying degrees of our ownness. These words of others carry with them their own expression, their own evaluative tone, which we assimilate, rework, re-accentuate. This is true, as Bakhtin claimed, not only for speech or language, but also for any kind of creative works. Therefore, it is common to use the word quotation not only for quoted words or sentences, but also for other forms of expression, for example, in music and the visual arts. Besides verbatim quotations, also, I quote again from the dictionary, a short musical passage or visual image taken from one piece of music or word of art and used in another can be a quotation. It's noteworthy that, according to this dictionary, only a short musical passage taken from one piece of music and used in another may count as quotation. It's not quite clear how long or short a musical quotation may be or ought to be. Anyway, there should be a boundary somewhere that distinguishes a quotation from a reproduction, from a performance, or a cover version of a piece of music, or of a substantial part, say, a particular movement of such a piece. The criteria may not be perfectly clear, and they may vary according to the length and character of the piece of music that adopts some short part of another piece, but there should be a boundary somewhere, and I think we have to discuss about that. Perhaps it's wrong, though, to assume that it must be a matter of quantity, of absolute or relative length. Other aspects might be relevant to distinguish a quotation from copies that should not count as quotations. For example, how does the adopting work relate to the work from which the sample was taken? We should be careful, however, not to draw the criteria for such a distinction in too narrow terms, because that might rule out types of quotation that are generally regarded as perfectly legitimate. There's no reason to assume, as the dictionary did, the relation of quoting should be restricted to works of art as the only kind of source from which something can be quoted in a piece of music or visual artwork. I accept that you would not want to call it a quotation if, for example, a composer uses transcriptions of typical patterns of birdsong as musical material. This may be an interesting case of the classical conception of art as imitation of nature, but most of us want to restrict the concept of quotation to quoting what other humans have said or done or made. So can you quote a bird? Still, there's so much more than merely works of art that can be quoted in art or music or in all other kinds of works. 100 years ago, Dada artists like Hannah Höch produced collages, quoting and arranging snippets of photographs and other images taken from various sources like the yellow press, political pamphlets, or technical drawings. Following pioneers of noise music like Luigi Russolo and inspired by radio and sonic film soundtracks, avant-garde composers like John Cage or Pierre Schaeffer in France, since the 1940s began to compose music with recordings of sounds and noises that were not reproductions of musical performances. After the Second World War, magnetic tape recording technology became increasingly available, and electronic studios allowed for remixing and blending sounds in ways previously unknown. As you all know very well, digital technologies made all this much easier, cheaper, and mobile, and pervasive. That's where we are now. Likewise, found footage films can be made up of samples of other movies that were works of art in their own right, but they may also include footage that never was part of a previous work of art, but was taken, for example, from documentary footage, TV programs, or educational films, and increasingly also from private films or videos. Fashion notoriously quotes anything. It quotes works of art, and more typically, classical styles, but also corporate designs or brands by other companies or organizations. Contemporary car design often quotes classical models from the heritage of the same company or from other manufacturers. We are all very familiar with such quotation practices, and there are many more indeed. Why do we quote? We quote role models that we honor, with whom we identify, and with whom we want to be identified or affiliated. We quote authorities in order to remind ourselves and others of what we think is right. We quote authorities in order to borrow their authority. We hope to gain authority for certain claims we want to make. We quote others whom we want to criticize or hold accountable. Historical documents, but also photographic images and sound recordings, can be quoted as testimony, since they contain traces of past moments. There are many reasons why we may want to come back to particular moments later on, and it may be important to be able to refer to such traces. In the sciences and scholarly literature, we quote research results of others that we presume as valid in order to be able to base our own arguments on certain assumptions without having to prove everything we accept as right. We are bound to quote and cite our sources in academic writing in order to make it easier for our readers to trace these sources and to control both their reliability and what we have done with them. The obligation to quote exactly and to cite properly is also relevant under certain circumstances in journalism, politics, and diplomacy, in certain criminal proceedings or litigation, whenever it matters for some important question to establish precisely to whom a particular utterance or speech act can be attributed. Changing the wording of what, for example, a state representative said on a particular occasion and attributing to that representative something she didn't say at least not exactly in the way she is later quoted by some negligent journalist or political adversary, may, under certain circumstances, lead to a serious political crisis. Since ancient times, quotations from prestigious sources have been used as adornment of speech and were even required by classical rhetorics. Often we repeat or quote witty phrases, gestures, looks that impressed us or that we admire. We borrow their wit or splendor since we feel a need to display some ourselves and fear that we could not do better at the moment. In music and the arts, as well as in literature, there's a long tradition of starting with a model, a motive, an image, or a phrase taken from some source and somehow playing with it in variations, contrast, parody, pastiche, or satire. The obligations to quote exactly and to respect the identity of the source, as well as to give credit and cite properly, that are widely accepted in certain use contexts, are paradigmatic for the ethics of quotation. Everybody knows this, and most of us accept it most of the time and act accordingly. Failure to quote adequately or to cite properly can get us into trouble in certain contexts. Attributing some allegedly scandalous utterance to a person who never said such a thing can be a joke, but it may seriously harm the reputation of that person, and that could be a tort or a felony. And simply taking someone's work to fill a gap in one's own speech or literary, artistic, or scientific work without giving due credit may amount to plagiarism. This is what apparently was at stake in a prominent case that has been litigated in Germany for almost two decades now without conclusion so far. It's been up for trial at the European Court of Justice in July. We are going to hear more about that from Lionel Bentley in a minute. The case was and is about a sample taken from the percussion piece Metall auf Metall, Metal on Metal, from Kraftwerk's iconic 1977 album Trans-Europa Express and used in Sabrina Setlur's song Nur Mir, Only Mine, a top 10 hit in Germany in 1997, produced by Moses Pelham. The case was widely reported, at least in German newspapers. We want to take a closer look now at both pieces in order to make up our minds if the use of the sample might count as quotation. Pelham is deeply influenced by hip-hop music. Nur Mir contains samples from various sources. The database at Who Sampled has identified four different sources, but I'm quite sure that there might be actually more. Maybe some of you can point out some further samples. The sample at the center of the Kraftwerk litigation is really short. A rhythmic sound fragment of 2 seconds, something like a tick-tick, tick-tick-tack. It was not regarded sufficiently original to vindicate a musical copyright claim in the first place, which is the reason why Kraftwerk resorted to their ancillary copyright in the sound recording. In German, it's Leistungsschutzrecht des Tonträgerherstellers. It's not easy to tell which moment exactly from the rather subtle and on the surface pretty monotonous Kraftwerk piece was actually the source of the sample that was used and transformed by Pelham. Apparently, digital pattern recognition software has established that it must have been one particular moment in the 37th and 38th seconds. Most listeners won't be able to identify it precisely without painstaking comparisons. Anyway, the Kraftwerk sound is recognizably present, in particular in the opening sections of the Setlur song, and it accompanies the song throughout, although it's not discernible in every moment. One can argue that Pelham has built his piece on this beat. The sample has been slightly modified and looped and is reiterated throughout the entire piece. On the other hand, there are also other rhythms, funky beats, guitar riffs, and most notably the rapping and singing by Sabrina Setlur, which dominate the oral impression. But the Kraftwerk beat serves as the song's rhythmic backbone, and the Kraftwerk sound contributes decisively to the cool industrial atmosphere against which the female self-assertion of Sabrina Setlur's voice bursts out. I suggest that we start by start listening to the beginning of the Setlur song until the refrain comes up. Then listen to the first music, first minute of the Kraftwerk piece, and then return to the latter part of the Setlur song to hear how the beat made up from the Kraftwerk sample is still there, but under several layers of other musical material, also a second rhythm track that dominates already from the around the 20th second, as you will hear. Let's begin with Nur Mir. Oh, sorry. Just a moment. Ich muss mal eben aus dem Programm herausgehen. Und hier das iTunes anschalten. That was the beginning of Nur Mir. Here's Metall auf Metall from the beginning. Okay, did you notice the sample? It's in the, as I said, in the 37th, 38th second, and I just try to get this opened with this link, because there I can see the seconds better, but now. Ja, und dann klickt es aber gleich weiter. No. Oh yes, okay, there we are. Komme ich jetzt wieder raus? Okay, sorry. Okay, this short beat, tick, 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 tack, was looped to produce the continuous synthetic beat so this is the graphic representation of the sample, and it was copied and copied and copied give the rhythmic bass line. For Pelham's piece. Now I jump into the latter part of the piece. Oh, come on.
Bis zu 40% auf gesunde Lebensmittel bei All You Need Fresh. Einfach gesünder leben.
Dann gehen wir hier rein, ja. Und dann haben wir es hier. So it turns into the guitar piece. And this is how it ends. Okay, what do you think? Should Pelham have the right to do with this Kraftwerk sample what he has done and why? Because it was de minimis, negligible, or because it was a quotation and he should have the right to quote the other piece and to do with a quotation what he does, not only to just to refer to it, but also to build with it and make something new with it. That's the discussion I think we are going to have today. Thank you.